de Lamrito. A threat against ISKCON. Dus Karandaram. Prabhupada's translating would require a great deal of concentration. He would have two or three of his big Bhagavatam volumes opened up, and sometimes a number of other small books which he would refer to for something or other. He would sit wearing his glasses and speaking into his dictating machine, and he would be completely absorbed in reading. Sometimes he would make a brief note, then look into one of his books, then open another book, then turn back to another page, make a note, and then dictate. It required a great deal of concentration. I think that's why Prabhupada did most of it at night, after he would rise from his late evening nap. From 1 or 2 in the morning until 6 or 7 in the morning, he would be absorbed. It was quiet at that time, and he would become absorbed. But when Prabhupada became disturbed about the problems in ISKCON, it inhibited his work. He was spending his time discussing with visiting devotees, or myself, or whatever was there. Then he would spend more time thinking matters over or pondering the problem, and he wouldn't be able to concentrate on his translating. These difficulties disturbed him, and he would think about them and say, I have not been able to concentrate. I've been thinking about this problem. Although the spiritual master suffers for his disciples' mistake, Prabhupada's perspective was not simply negative. He continued chanting and lecturing in the temple and inviting the leaders of his movement to visit him in the ideal center of Los Angeles. But he also corrected the diseased mentality wherever it appeared. When, for example, Gurudas wrote from London to say that they had allowed an Indian guest to lecture in the temple while sitting on Prabhupada's Vyasasam, Prabhupada immediately wrote back correcting him. I'm surprised how you allowed Mr. Parikh to sit on the Vyasasam. You know that Vyasasam is meant for the representatives of Vyasadev, the spiritual master. But Mr. Parikh does not come in the parampara to become the representative of Vyas. Neither does he have any sound knowledge of Vaishnava principles. I understand from your letter that sometimes discussions on Aurobindo philosophy are done by Mr. Parikh from the Vyasa sound, so I'm a little surprised. How did you allow this? How did you allow like this? I think you should rectify immediately, and all these mistakes are stated by you in the last two lines of your letter. I think the best thing to do is to stop this class. Nonsense ought not to be tolerated. In a letter from Paris, Tamal Krishna asked Prabhupada philosophical questions about the perfection of the spiritual master, and Prabhupada answered fully but sternly, a spiritual master is always liberated. In any condition of his life, he should not be mistaken as an ordinary human being. The position of the spiritual master is achieved by three processes. One is called sadhana siddha, that means one who is liberated by executing the regulative principles of devotional service. Another is kripa siddha, one who is liberated by the mercy of Krishna who is devotee. And another is nitya siddha, who is never forgetful of Krishna throughout his whole life. These are three features of the perfection of life. So far Narada Muni is concerned, in his previous life, he was a maidservant's son. But by the mercy of the devotees, he later became Siddha. And next life, he appeared as Narada with complete freedom to move anywhere by the grace of the Lord. So even though he was in his previous life a maidservant's son, there was no impediment in the achievement of his perfect spiritual life. Similarly, any living entity which conditioned can achieve the perfectional stage of life by the above mentioned processes, and the vivid example is Narada Muni. So I do not know why you have asked me about my previous life, whether I was subjected to the laws of material nature. So even though accepting that I was subjected to the laws of material nature does not hamper in my becoming a spiritual master. What is your opinion? From the life of Narada Muni, it is distinct that although he was a conditioned soul in his previous life, there was no impediment for him becoming a spiritual master. This law is applicable not only to the spiritual master, but to every living entity. So far I am concerned, I cannot say what I was in my previous life. But one great astrologer calculated that I was previously a physician and my life was sinless. Besides that, to corroborate the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brasta Bijayate, which means an unfinished yogi takes birth in a rich family or born of a suchi or pious father. By the grace of Krishna, I got those two opportunities in the present life to be born of a pious father and brought up in one of the richest aristocratic families of Calcutta, Kashinath Mulik. The Radha Krishna deity in this family called me to meet him. And therefore, last time when I was in Calcutta, I stayed in that temple along with my American disciples. Although I had immense opportunities to indulge in the four principles of sinful life, because I was connected with a very aristocratic family, Krishna always saved me. And throughout my whole life, I do not know what is illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, or gambling. So far as my present life is concerned, I do not remember any part of my life when I was forgetful of Krishna. Prabhupada thought some of his leaders had become entangled in ISKCON management and were trying to gain control for themselves. In the class he would speak of this only indirectly, as he had exposed that devotees weren't chanting and reading enough. Consequently, most devotees were unaware of Prabhupada's anxiety. But occasionally, while sitting in his room or in the garden, Prabhupada would express his concern. He wanted his disciples to manage ISKCON, but to do so they must be pure. Only then would he be able to concentrate on writing books. In June he wrote to Brahmananda, "Now my desire is that I completely devote my time in the matter of writing and translating books and arranging. An arrangement should be done that our society be managed automatically. I think we should have a central governing body for dealing with important matters. I've already talked with Garga Muni about this. So if you come by the Ratha Yatra festival, we can have a preliminary meeting at San Francisco in this connection." In July, Prabhupada visited San Francisco for the 4th annual ISKCON Ratha Yatra. It was the biggest festival ever, with 10,000 people joining in the procession through Golden Gate Park to the beach. Prabhupada felt ill and did not join the parade until about midway. He danced in the road before the carts. As 100 disciples encircled him, chanting and playing kartals and mridangas. Afterwards, Prabhupada wanted to ride in the cart, just as he had done the year before, but some of his disciples restrained him. A gang of hoodlums, they said, had caused trouble earlier, and for Prabhupada to ride on the cart might be dangerous. He disagreed, but finally relented and rode in his car to the beach. At a family dog auditorium on the beach, Prabhupada began his lecture. I want to thank you all for coming. Although I'm not well, I felt it my responsibility to come as you have so kindly attended Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra festival. I felt it is my duty to come and see you and address you. His voice was frail. Later in his apartment in San Francisco, Prabhupada complained that he had not been allowed to ride in the cart. As leader of the Hare Krishna movement, he should have ridden on the cart. Not only had his disciples refused him, but several disciples had prominently ridden on the cart, as if in his place. Prabhupada asked the many temple presidents assembled for the Rath Yatra to meet and discuss forming a governing body to manage ISKCON. The devotees met and then reported that they thought only one of them should be elected the chief representative. They hadn't understood. The strength should be in a group, Prabhupada said, not in a single individual. Since he was ISKCON's founder Acharya, what need there for other single leader? He asked them to meet again. Returning to Los Angeles, Prabhupada announced he would award several of his disciples the Sannyas order. The devotee community excitedly prepared for the festival. The sannyasis, Prabhupada said, would leave their temples to travel and preach. It was an unprecedented change for ISKCON, a sensation, and the devotees loved it. Although Prabhupada was awarding sannyas to some of his advanced disciples, he also said the sannyas initiation would purify these disciples and to rid them of their entanglement in material desires. He set the initiation for the end of July 2 weeks later. One day in Los Angeles, a visiting devotee speaking with Prabhupada in his room humbly asked why Srila Prabhupada hadn't answered his questions in a recent letter. Prabhupada remembered no such letter. Inquiring from his secretary, Prabhupada discovered that his secretary often showed incoming letters to certain leaders, while their discretion would sometimes withhold letters they considered pressing or too disturbing. Prabhupada was outraged. How dare they come between him and his other disciples? How could they presume that to make such decisions on their own? How could the disciples censor his spiritual master's mail? Although Prabhupada reprimanded the devotees involved, the incident only increased the already heavy burden on his mind. Again, the thought of spiritual disease transmitted in letters from India disturbed him. He found no one close to him in Los Angeles with whom he could speak confidentially about his serious minimization of the spiritual master. As his anxiety affected him bodily, he fell ill and stopped eating. Karandar, I heard some things, but in the spirit of going on, it had all been glossed over. And Prabhupada didn't talk much about it either. One time, though, I was in his room right after the sannyasis had left Los Angeles, and he asked me if I understood what had gone on. I said, well, I think so, but I didn't really know very much. At that time, the devotees were going out on Sankirtan, were in the alleyway chanting, and Prabhupada was at his desk. Hearing the kirtan, he turned back, looking in the direction of the devotees below his window, and smiled. Then he turned to me. They are innocent, he said. Do not involve them in this business. Karandar still did not understand, and he wondered what not to involve them in. He did know, however, that a shadow was hanging over the heads of the sannyasis. Paul Patrick requested 3 trusted disciples to come be with him in Los Angeles. Upanuga. I was in Buffalo and the phone rang. Someone said, Srila Prabhupada is on the telephone. I said, what? You're kidding? It wasn't Srila Prabhupada, but it was his servant, Devananda. Devananda said, Srila Prabhupada wants you to come to Los Angeles. I said, what's wrong? He said, well, he does not want... Then he said, Srila Prabhupada wants to talk about it now. So Srila Prabhupada got on the phone, and as soon as I heard him on the line, I paid my obeisances. Then I said, Srila Prabhupada, what's wrong? He said, you did not know I was ill? I said, no. He said, you should come immediately. Then I said, Srila Prabhupada, let me speak to Devananda. I did not know what was going on, so I asked Devananda, tell me what's going on. Then he said, Srila Prabhupada said, he will talk with you when you come. He will explain everything. Then Bhagavan Das. One day after coming from Sankirtan, I received a call from Rupanuga, who told me that he was on his way to Los Angeles. Having received a call from Prabhupada that there was some disturbance there, he could not tell me more, but he said he would call me when he returned. This set my mind reeling. I sat in the chair, hot and sweaty after coming back from Sankirtan, my mind absorbed in thinking of Srila Prabhupada and what could be going on. I called Los Angeles to talk to Prabhupada's secretary, Devananda, who told me he could not really say anything at that point. I was hoping somehow or other I could get more information of the situation, but after waiting for some time, I went in to take my shower. I was in the shower when all of a sudden someone banged on the door. Prabhupada is on the telephone. He wants to speak with you. I was sure there was some misunderstanding. How is it possible that the spiritual master could be on the telephone? Anyway, I ran out of the shower all wet and picked up the telephone and said, hello. There was a long pause, and then all of a sudden I heard Srila Prabhupada's voice on the other end. Bhagavan Das? Yes, I said, Srila Prabhupada, please accept my humble obeisances. How can I serve you? I was completely stunned. Then Prabhupada's voice came slowly on the phone. There are many things that you will do, but the first thing is that you must come here immediately, I said. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, I will be there right away. And with that, we both hung up. I managed to go to gather the money together to take the flight to Los Angeles. When I got on the plane in Detroit, it just so happened that Rupanuga was also on the same plane. We sat together and discussed what could possibly be happening in Los Angeles to cause Srila Prabhupada so much distress. When we arrived at the airport, Karandar picked up and told us that some of the older devotees had been plotting against Prabhupada, and that day Prabhupada had given several of the men sannyas and sent them away to preach. This was all quite amazing to me, and I did not really know what to make of it. When we came into Prabhupada's room, he looked distressed and was rubbing his head, complaining of the blood pressure that was caused by the conspiracy. Tamal Krishna. I had written Srila Prabhupada a lengthy letter from Paris, describing how we wanted to expand our preaching efforts in Europe. And suddenly, I received a telegram from His Divine Grace that said, received your letter 26th July. Come Los Angeles immediately. I was quite surprised. And I remember disentangling myself that very day and leaving that night, even though I was in charge of the activities there. When I arrived in Los Angeles, I found Rupanuga, Bhagavan, Kirtananda Swami and Karandar. I was in a very enthusiastic, blissful mood from having done so much Sankirtan, and I had no idea of any difficulty. But these devotees were in were in a heavy, sober, somber mood, and they tried to explain to me what was going on, but actually I could not get a very clear understanding. I had arrived in the late afternoon, and I could not see Srila Prabhupada. Early the next morning, when Prabhupada was informed that I had arrived, he called me before Mangalarati. I went up to his quarters, and when I came to the door, Prabhupada was sitting in his room with his head downward. He looked up and he appeared to be almost ill. He was gaunt and looked very sorrowful. He said meekly, just as I was bowing down, "Have they told you?" Of course, I had not really understood everything, but in reply to his question, I said, "Yes, they have told me something," and Prabhupada said, "Can you help me?" So I answered, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." He said, can you take me out of here?" I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." Of course, I did not feel that I could help Srila Prabhupada, but I could understand that I had to say yes. "How can you say no? I won't." But how far could I help? It's like lifting the heaviest object in the world. The guru is so heavy, and yet I had to say yes. Srila Prabhupada asked me next, "Where will you take me?" And I said, "Well, we can go to Florida," he said. "No, that's not far enough," I said. "I could take you to Europe," he said. "No, that also will not be good. The problem may be there also." So anyway, we did not conclude where to go at that time, but Prabhupada said, "It's like a fire here. I must leave at once. It has become like fire." Prabhupada confided in Rupanuga, Tamalakrishna and Bhagavan about the various incidents, his mail withheld, his name misprinted, his riding in the Ratayatra parade restricted. He mentioned these and other indications as that certain persons wanted to move in into the background, out of the reach of his disciples. He did not want to stay in Los Angeles. He did not want to stay in the United States. He did not even want to go to Europe. He wanted to leave the arena of his disciples' offenses. But before leaving, he wanted to complete his plans for establishing a governing body. To manage to this end, he dictated the following on July 28. "I, the undersigned A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, disciple of On Vishnupad Paramahamsahan, Astotara Shishimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, came in the United States in 1965 on September 18th for the purpose of starting Krishna Consciousness Movement. For 1 year, I had no shelter. I was traveling in many parts of this country. Then in 1966, July, I incorporated this society under the name and style of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, briefly ISKCON. Gradually, the society increased, and one after another branches were opened. Now we have got 34 branches and listed herewith. As we have increased our volume of activities, now I think a governing body commission hereinafter referred to as GBC should be established. I'm getting old, 75 years old, therefore at any time I may be out of the scene. Therefore, I think it is necessary to give instruction to my disciples how they shall manage the whole institution. They are already managing individual centers represented by one president, one secretary, and one treasurer. And in my opinion, they are doing nice. But we want still more improvement in the standard of temple management, propaganda for Krishna consciousness, distribution of books and literatures, opening of new centers, and educating devotees to the right standard. Therefore, I have decided to adopt the following principles, and I hope my beloved disciples will kindly accept them." Prabhupada listed the names of 12 persons who would be GBC. Sriman Rupanuga Das Adhikari, Sriman Bhagavan Das Adhikari, Sriman Syamasundara Das Adhikari, Sriman Satsvarup Das Adhikari, Sriman Karandar Das Adhikari, Shriman Amsaduta Das Adhikari, Shriman Tamalkrishna Das Adhikari, Shriman Sudan Das Adhikari, Shriman Balimartan Das Pramachari, Shriman Jagadish Das Adhikari, Shriman Ayagriva Das Adhikari, Shriman Krishna Das Adhikari. These personalities are now considered as my direct representatives. While I am living, they will act as my zonal secretaries, and after my demise, they will be known as executors. Prabhupada describes the role of the sannyasis. I have already awarded sannyas, or the renounced order of life, to some of my students, and they have also got very important duties to perform in this connection. The sannyasis will travel to our different centers for preaching purposes, as well as enlightenment of the members of the Center for Spiritual Advancement. Prabhupada's legal document went on to set forth general directions for the GBC secretaries. They should travel regularly to the temples in their respective zones to ensure that each devotee chanted 16 rounds and followed a regulated schedule, and that the temples were clean. His 12 GBC secretaries would reveal of him of management. Okay, I will finish this section. And they would rectify present and future difficulties within the society. That rectification, Prabhupada's documents explained, would be possible only when the devotees in each temple engaged fully in regulated devotional service, rising early for Mangalarati and 4:30, attending Srimad Bhagavatam class and reciting the Sanskrit verses and chanting in the streets and distributing back to Godhead magazines and other Krishna conscious literature. This emphasis on strictly following the Krishna conscious principles would supersede all material formulas for management. The GBC would ensure that in their appointed zones all the devotees were properly engaged. There would be no Maya. Srila Prabhupada ki.